Hello. Thank you, young man. Should I not help? Or should I have asked him for mispronouncing my name? Now I've done. What can I say? Kara. Where is that? I mispronounce my name as well. Often. I just did that, it's true. How are you tonight? Can you hear me? Yeah? What kind of mood are we in?
Excellent.
Yes? Excellent mood? Joyful? I hear about death. Just gauging the room. Do I hear short poems? Do I hear long poems? Do I hear the long swing? Do I hear a couple spirals? It's a poem of equations. It's called Elegy for My Father's Labor. And my father was a kind of self-trained engineer. He was like a man's man. He was really lovely and warm, but not very emotive. He didn't like to linger about emotions. And so when I was thinking, when I was writing this book, I thought about him a lot in ways in which we might converse. In this one came up, because you know all those mathematical symbols, you know, like easy ones like what a square root is, and other ones that are more mysterious to me, like the one with the three dots. You know that one? Sorry?
Therefore,
thank you. Yeah, see, I have to look that up every time. Because my mind doesn't think that way. So, this is, every line in here is using one of those symbols. The first one being therefore. Hard hat, life preserver. Wrench, bouquet. Number of days present, early morning disappearances. Length of visits with children, reciting letters from home. Approximate value in electromagnets. Number of loads per expressway exit route. Deaf mute in electrical circuitry. Relay. Random silences. Fact of fluctuating power supply. Total unawareness of emotional immersion. Water flow. Empty waiting pool. Approximate speed per takeoff. Number of film reels. Scenery shot, hours of back pain, number of pounds of steel struck on the head, number of questions unanswered, quality of curiosity shared, ability to back out of emotional situations, and ability to turn enormous machines on a dime. Chances of responding the same way to any emotional threat. Chances of rain in Vancouver in February. Overall assessment, actions maintain value even without physical form. I guess I'm doing the dip. This is an elegy for a lost brother. And I had this audacious plan to do a conceptual kind of poem, like an erasure poem, of an epic. And I got got about 10 pages in and decided it was really awful. And also really boring to do erasures forever. And I really love the people who can sit there and do it forever, but I'm not one of them. So, but I did like the little tiny bit at the beginning, so I kept it. And it's called Elegy for a Lost Brother. And it is very short. Where have your rovings forced you? What lands of men? What sturdy towns? wild, savage. We grieve sorely the gods, spinning threads of death. The dead ones. In the center of any city, the dead ones assemble. On Main Street, under overpasses, by train tracks, the dead lament and rejoice like spiny kites locked onto subway wheels. Me, they say, spiking through the exhausted air, watch me. The noise you hear when diving into a civic pool is the awe of the dead. The humming silence is their slow, methodical dance. The dead have no weight, but they stomp nonetheless. The dead hold hands in long lines. They are determined to be heard, to be seen. Look at me, they say, diving in and out of earth like porpoises. Look at me. The dead are not fireworks. They cannot be collected or ordered or made useful to the living. The dead cause allergies, they laugh when we sneeze. They appear at sunset, their belongings condensed into little origami figures. Like the living, they will not listen. They will not leave their baggage outside the gates, and so they circle around and around, sure of a hidden entrance. In the center of the glass forest, my grandmother, and maybe your grandmother, lies in state. It's an ashen affair, silent, hollow is the inside of the milk carton. You might have stepped on her there. Certainly you dwelled past, thinking of your beautiful future and your children's future, and the ideas of the future like automated feet clicking soft. Once the light could not find her, small headstone, circled around a group of people for an unnervingly long time, I realized I was in a movie and the director was standing on her head. The dead often have starring roles. The dead know how to lead. They know how to carry themselves. They have gravitas, and they know how to float. And of course, the dead have a sense of humor, even the most downtrodden dead. Relieved of their burdens, they think of their struggles and laugh. They lie back in death and hone their wit. They come to you in your panic and bite the soft parts of your feet. Tickle your palms, they lay their thoughts in the middle of the sidewalk and laugh. They place mirrors on your desk, they pull up your lips like rubber bands. To the dead, anger is like a trampoline, has bounce. Compassion is their superpower, time their weapon. Strong gusts of wind or bursts of sun flare when they are feeling for you. They follow you around, hoping you will notice them. The dead love spring. They eat daffodils, rocks, air, just for the spoiler. They could have felt this way always, even when they lived in a trailer surrounded by crackheads, or in their quiet suburbs surrounded by thick clouds of barbecue, or in their small flats stacked neatly by the lake. But now their skin hung out to dry and the clouds so favorable, they lean into the breeze. A dead one reaches across the table and sticks her tongue down Lee Miller's throat. Flowers pile up for the dead, cups of carnation, seafoam, rafts of lilies. Every city has a different variety of cemetery flower. Committed mourners love the hardy chrysanthemum, the geranium, the burning bush, the wisteria, the weeping juniper. In the north, they wait for the spring to bury their dead. They stack them on ice. Of an afternoon, the dead gather by the town clock and mock the living. A riderless horse follows the procession, a lone man playing the bagpipe. Black boots span the road like spilled beans. Death's harsh footfalls, death in her steel toes. They still desire, many of them, and so they hang on wind currents, peering down and yearning. They say we die as we lived, but I don't believe that. I would like a death without judgment. With a head of no one is going to lose one's cool, the afterlife does not descend like a bamboo sheet. It may fall a solid wall of nothing, but I can't imagine someone sorting as the bodies tumble in, like peas for winter, the dark, the sweet, the tainted, rolling into the compost of eternity. Where is she, we know? What city does she haunt? The sound of death is like sand in my ear, like texture, like bits of bone fragment in the sauce. Death in her boa hisses at me on the stairs at night. Death will not let me sleep. Death and her twin sister, death. Still, I honor the dead ones. I carry them in their boxes, placed on my shelf, hidden under my bed. I gather pieces of them, and I carry them on earphones. I file them, order them, I sew them into the hem of my coat to keep them close. How can we move forward without carrying the weight of our dead? How can we move forward not carrying the weight of our dead? When we dead awaken, sure, or let them sleep in our poems, cocooned there in chenille or silk. She knees, she curls, she cowering at the antlers of the fell fur, face down, burrowing into the past, kicking the surf of rotting cedar at the future, fanning bright and sudden as lichen. Once you see it there on the stone walk, on the forest floor, on the tree, on the bark, everywhere, like glaciers receding. In the morning, she sleepwalks through the forest, trying to think of the future. Crisp as asteroids, or worse, an atom meaning only the continent inside of her is split. And she is so hungry to be split, to be entered and torn apart. The past is knowable, or she likes to think, but no. She knows it isn't so. The path with its spiral of revelations. She elbows, she knees, lock, tongue, parted, spit, not let anything inside or out. She a sack of sadness, a lost limb in search of her body. Why awaken now? Even Keats, the virgin poet, is asleep. Anne Carson is a footnote in the biography of death. Few of us get mentioned. The giantess has split her womb. The city has long ago sold its future. My loved ones, like a dandelion in the wind. I have everything to look for and nowhere to be. The dead know this. They are constantly tying a thread around your ankle, touching bells to your hair. Laugh, they say. I guess you need a laugh now. Ken read very short, so I'm going to read one more. Carry on. It's the last of the sonnets that's called Like a Jet. It starts out with a line from Sylvia Plath, who's very much the core of this book. All the gods know is destinations. I've raised the glass, my eye, your hook. Let's face it, the world is a shrinking place and hungry, too much grief to feed. I float away from you on hard covers. I step out on the stacked flowers. Words, if they were soil, I would throw them back in the compost pile and wait for spring. Those, this is how it is, speeches appear and layer diamonds, soft as bullets. I went to the library looking to scaffold my thoughts. Sure. Now you say Lucretius. Intelligence is so often hindsight. Outside Hollywood Lighthouse townhouse, there are taxis. The end of me or you is of no concern. Frederick Seidel anoints me at the head of his penis. It is soft as a chamois and spreads like egg across my scalp. Thank you so much for your attention.